The morning session, and the first speaker is Jeremy Summer from Tasmania.
Okay, thanks, Ant. So what this is about, well, there's a couple of things. One of the things is I could have given this talk without talking about trees at all, which is a nice thing for, and it's really relevant to phylogenetics, but I could give the whole talk and not talk about trees. But I've got a tree over here because one of the motivations, the easiest way to understand it is to talk about a tree, unfortunately. So I do have to mention a tree. So what I'm going to talk about is what makes a good model and what makes a good continuous time Markov model. So we've seen rate matrices and we know the Kimura model, I've put it up here. But there's a general question here of what makes a good model. I mean, can you just arbitrarily choose them? And the answer to that, I'm going to argue, is no. You know, there are some special things you have to consider. And the origin of this goes back to an observation Peter Jarvis made that about closure of Markov models. So he made the observation several years ago, and well, actually probably 5 years ago now. And in 2009, I met Jesus Fernandez Sanchez in the US at a meeting, and we were both working on sort of group theoretical applications to phylogenetic problems, and we thought we should work on something together. And I mean, that's the fake thing. He wanted to come to Hobart, I wanted to go to Barcelona. So. But what happened when Jesus came to Hobart last year, I said, oh, okay, let's think about our group theory stuff, but what are we going to work on? What models are we going to work on? And I said, well, actually, there's this zeroth problem of what makes a good model, okay, going back to what Peter Jarvis was talking about. And actually, that's all we did, and we've been doing it for a year now, and it's developed into a big thing, and there's quite a good story to tell, okay, so. And so it's about closure, okay, so in phylogenetics, we have sequence evolution, it's a stochastic process, and this is generally modeled as a homogeneous continuous time Markov chain. And so homogeneous means that the rates are constant in time, and even on a tree that the rates are constant through time and everywhere on the tree. This is a standard assumption. Okay, and so what makes a model? Well, you have a rate matrix Q, and in the rate matrix you have an idea of free parameters. And then the transition matrix under this continuous time hypothesis is the exponential of this Q times some time parameter. Hopefully fairly familiar. Okay, and there are examples of these things that people here should know. So there's the Jukes-Cantor model, which only has one free parameter. The Kimura 2 and 3 parameter models, the Felsenstein model, GTR, and the general Markov model. The general Markov model is kind of the granddaddy where every entry in your Q matrix is free. Okay, so when I talk about a model, I'm not talking about a tree or anything, I'm just talking about a set of transition matrices, okay, which means because the transition matrices are just exponentials of rate matrices, just means I have to define what the Qs are. So a model is a set, and it's a set of transition matrices, but it's the exponential of another set, which is a set of Q matrices drawn from the general Markov model, plus some additional constraints. And so these constraints might define what these submodels are. Okay, these are all submodels of the general Markov model. Okay, now the closure question is about what if we did consider an inhomogeneous process? What if we thought, okay, the rates aren't going to be constant everywhere, and we might like to, at least in theory, think about what happens for an inhomogeneous process. And in theory, you can actually have that the Q matrix is a function of time. And all that I say today is actually valid for that very general situation where the Q is actually a function of time. Although I never set it up like that. Okay, but what can happen? Okay, and so this is the motivation. If you have a situation here where you wanted to model a model on a phylogenetic tree, and you said, okay, I'm going to have a different Q matrix on every edge. Maybe I want to generalize slightly for the phylogenetic context. And you say, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and do that. But there's a problem. If you're marginalising, you say, okay, this is taxa 1, 2 and 3, and then I say, well, what happens if I forgot about taxa number 2? Maybe I didn't sample it. Then my model would reduce to this situation. Okay, so then I would have Q1 on this part of this edge, and then Q2 on the rest of it. Okay? So for consistency, you say, okay, well, the transition matrix I'm going to get on that edge is the product of these two transition matrices, and it's the exponential of Q2, the exponential of Q1. And I would like that there is some rate matrix Q hat, which gives the, you know, the complete description down that edge as a sort of homogeneous description. Okay, but what the talk's all about is, what is this Q hat? Okay, oh, and I should say, if Q1 was equal to Q2, or just a scale factor, then because Q hat would just be the sum of Q1 and Q2. Okay, it would just be Q1 plus Q2. If they are different, we can't do this in general. And you'll see exactly what goes wrong in about 30 seconds. Okay, why is this relevant? Because models like this are being used in phylogenetics. Okay, so there are various people who are discussing this type of thing. But more importantly, it's in truth we all know, or biologists probably know, that rates aren't constant. And so somehow when a Q matrix is fitted to a tree, okay, and we assume that all these Q matrices are the same, it's somehow making an assumption that we really know that the rates weren't constant in evolutionary history, but we're going to make this simplifying assumption that they were. Okay, and then what I'm talking about is this a consistent assumption? Is this a good assumption? Okay, so is Q hat an average? So say the true situation was something inhomogeneous like that. Is it fair enough to fit a single Q on there as some kind of average? Can I interpret it in that way? And that comes down to, if I choose a particular model, is it actually guaranteed that this average Q hat, this guy here, is still in my model if Q1 and Q2 were chosen for the model, is Q hat in the model? Okay, and that's not guaranteed. That's the whole point. Okay, so what can go wrong? There's this thing called the BCH formula. It's the Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula. It's from like 1892 or something. I looked up the reference a couple of months ago. And what it's saying is if you take the product of the exponential of two matrices, then you get the thing that you would expect here, A plus B, but you get all these correcting terms. And what these correcting terms are is that they're built up from these commutators. Okay, so if these matrices commute, then this commutator is zero, and you wouldn't get all these correcting terms. And so it would really just be that e to the a times e to the b is e to the a plus b. Okay, but in general, that's not the case. And the content of the BCH formula is that what you get in this expression here is a plus b, and then a commutator, and then a commutator of commutators. Okay, this thing here is called the commutator. And the content of the theorem is that it's all commutators along here. The key thing to notice is you never get A times B, right? Or you never get B times A. It's commutators of commutators, right? Which means that if you think about this in the phylogenetic model situation, then a model is going to be closed in the sense that Q hat is still in your model if Q1 and Q2 are, if and only if the sum of Q and Q hat are there. Okay, so that's, you need the sums to be in your model, and you need all these commutators to be in your model. Okay, and in the theory of Lie groups, well known to mathematicians for a long time, this means that the set of Q matrices should form a Lie algebra. Okay, it's the statement that it's a vector space because of this statement, and that because the commutators are in the model again, it means that this model must be a Lie algebra. This is basically the definition of a Lie algebra. All right. So the argument is that we should look for models which form Lie algebras. Okay, and so what models are closed or do form Lie algebras? I should say, actually, that up to some subtle thinking about this that I was only doing the other morning, the fact that your model forms a Lie algebra is a sufficient condition. Okay, it's not necessarily necessary. It's not necessary. So it could be that a model could be closed but doesn't form a Lie algebra. But I actually think, with a bit more thinking about this, that that wouldn't be true and it actually would be necessary and sufficient. Okay, but the thing is, we're going to look for models that form Lie algebras and then look at other models and just confirm explicitly that they're not closed. Okay, so what models are closed? Okay, so the idea is to think of a model as being a vector. And so the idea here is that these are your free parameters, the R for I, and the LIs are like basic matrices, so it's a sum of matrices. You'll see an example. Okay, and it turns out that if you think about a vector space, these are the basis vectors in the vector space. And it turns out that it's enough to check the generators of the Lie algebra. Okay, so for example, I've got over here these basic matrices here, which hope they're not too small. So you've got LAC. Oh, and I do column sums as zero instead of row sums because I was just born that way or something. So these are basic Q matrices where this is saying a transition from A to C. Okay, I've got an ordering A, C, G, T. So I've just got a 1 in this entry here and a minus 1 there. Everything else is 0. And so what's the Jukes-Cantor model? Well, it's just a fair sum of all these basic transitions, right? Each one of these is a 4x4 matrix. Then you get this L, which just has a 1 in every off-diagonal entry. And then the model is just generated from that L. Okay? And of course, that forms a Lie algebra. Okay, I just have to check on this L. And there's only one. It's trivial because I can just take L with L. Okay, so it's so trivial that maybe that's confusing. Okay, but the Kimura model is more interesting. So the Kimura model, you have three free parameters. And so you have three of these basic matrices. Okay, and so the model is just this set. This is just a set of Q matrices. Alpha, beta, gamma have got to be greater than 0 for it to be stochastic. But it turns out the Lie algebra is fine. So it's a three-dimensional model because it's got three free parameters, so that's three-dimensional. And it's abelian, so everything commits. Okay, and this is the origin of the Hadamard conjugation and all this business. So this is actually, a very nice algebraic model for this reason. But a much nicer example is the Felsenstein model, which also turns out to be one of these good models. Okay, and you have here you have four free parameters, which are just the stationary distribution elements. And so each Q matrix in this model is just this linear sum. You've got these free parameters, there are four of them, and your basic matrices are the R's. And it turns out this algebra is non-abelian, but it's still a Lie algebra. Okay, so if I take any one of these, if I call it Ri and Rj, and I take their commutator, it's Ri minus Rj, which is again in my model. Okay, so everything's working nicely for that guy. And also the general Markov model, which, thinking about it in a different way, that certainly has to be closed. In this case, you've got these 12 free parameters, alpha Rj. You've got these basic matrices, and the question is, what's the Lie algebra of these basic matrices? And here it is. Okay, so if I take Lij with LKL, I can express it as a linear sum of the Lij's again. So that's all good. Okay, what about GTR? Okay, so the next slide, Jesus wanted to call the paper this. Okay, I thought it was a bit strong because it's only a small part of the paper where we describe the problem with the GTR model. And the paper's quite big. It's about 30 pages, and, there's a page on the GTR. And, basically, I want to say there's a problem with GTR. We'll be considering other models in the future. Okay, so, but the result is that under any sensible definition, GTR is not closed. And so this is a question to come back to the audience, actually. I'm going to give two definitions, and if you can think of another one that maybe I should check, let me know. Okay, so there's the granddaddy version. I think this is the one that effectively is what is used when the GTR model is applied. And it's just defined by saying, you say that you take the set of Q matrices and you such that there exists a pi with this condition holding. Now, to understand that definition, how it's different, what it means, think about a different definition I could take. I could take a fixed pi, okay? So if I take a fixed pi, then I've got a different copy of GTR for every pi, and then it's the set of all Q matrices that satisfy that condition for that pi. Okay. So they're my two versions. Okay. I think in practice what people do is they're using this one, like in a practical study, because they're actually estimating pi from the data. Okay. But just to check, I define this one as well. Okay, but it doesn't matter because neither forms a Lie algebra and neither is closed. Okay, so you can check it doesn't form a Lie algebra and you can check that the models aren't closed too. Because remember, the Lie algebra part's just sufficient condition. Okay. And so from the comments at the start of the talk, this poses serious problems for the interpretation of GTR in more general settings, but also maybe it just poses serious problems for GTR under the observation that we know that rates aren't constant, we're somehow averaging. Okay, so what does an average mean for GTR? It's not clear. Okay, the interesting bit for me is, what are the alternatives? Can we generate a full list? And is it just a matter of finding subalgebras of the general Markov model? Okay, on the face of it, it sounds like that's true, that's all we have to do, and we should be able to apply classic results from Lie group theory, but the thing is, it's not that simple because we have to worry about things being stochastic all the time. And the technical things that happen, and I won't go into them, but it just complicates the issue and means that there's actually some work for us to do. We can't just look up in a textbook on Lie group theory. Okay, and it's actually a very hard problem to do this in general, okay? So we have to introduce some extra structure to allow us to solve the problem. And the structure is the symmetries of models. Okay. So what do I mean by symmetry of model? It's that if you permute the nucleotides, okay, so if you permute amongst A, G, C, T, there is something that something about the model doesn't change. Okay. So consider the graphical representation of the Kimura model. That's this guy here. And you notice that graph is invariant under Z2 cross Z2, the Klein group. This is well known. And so you could say that model has the symmetry of the Klein group, okay? But and this is actually the definition of equivariant models, which I don't have time to talk about. But it's clear to me that this isn't the best definition of symmetry because the parameter labels are irrelevant, okay? So the thing is, if you choose a permutation that's not in this group, but say you just swapped A and C over here, if you think about it, what happens, I think you'd probably swap, you get the same graph back if you swapped alpha and gamma. Is that right? So the thing is that you can define a better symmetry condition by saying it leaves the graph invariant, but only up to a corresponding permutation of the parameters, okay? Because obviously it's the same model back, I've just relabeled the parameters. Okay, and what does that mean in the technical term? It means there's a group homomorphism between permutations of nucleotides and permutations of parameters of the model. Okay, and so nucleotides, four of them, D parameters in the model. Okay, and we can use this, and it dramatically simplifies the search for these Lie Markov models. The brute force approach is just to look for subalgebras of the general Markov model. But if we look for models with symmetry, then the problem just becomes dramatically easier. Not trivial, but easier. Okay, so the algorithm is, or the method is basically choose the symmetry you want, and then you say, okay, I want a Lie algebra with some generators, okay, a Lie algebra with D parameters, and I want this Lie algebra to be invariant under the permutations in this group, which means that when I act on the Lie algebra, I'm just permuting amongst the generators of the group. Sorry, generators of the model. So just this is just a statement that you're permuting the parameters. Okay, but this has an implication. It means that, oh dear, we can... I've still got a minute, yeah? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this means that we can write down L as a union of G orbits. So basically the trick is we consider it as a finite space, and we also consider it as a vector space. And we compare the structure as a finite space and a vector space. There's an orbit stabilizer theorem that tells us what the finite structure has to look like. And we can write out what the possibilities for the finite structure is. But we can also decompose the general Markov model as a, in a vector space way, into irreducible representations of the symmetry. And in this way, we can just match things up and say, is there such a model? Okay, and then we have to check for Lie algebra. And there's one more slide. Okay, so what happens is the general Markov model, you decompose as a linear space. What I'm doing here is I'm looking for models with a maximal symmetry, G4. And the general Markov model has this decomposition as a linear space like this. These are irreducible representations. And then, well, this is the magic slide, right? So what are the models that are closed which have S4 symmetry? It's this list. Okay, and this is telling what the finite structure is, what the linear structure is, what the Lie algebra is, what the dimension of the model is, how many parameters there are, and the popular label. And so the interesting one is this one. There is a model which is the sum of the Kimura model and the Felsenstein model. And we're still organising the list of Lie Markov models for cases of less symmetry. Okay, this is actually very important. And we've got a paper, and I couldn't get the reference this morning because the internet at the hotel is not working, but who uses the references anyway? Just Google it. And please consider coming to file a manual. I know it's a long way, but I'd love to have you. And thanks to the organisers. Thanks. You found it.
One Mike question. Easy question, please.
That's hard to choose. How do I know if it's easy? So the one place where these branch-specific models are used really widely is detecting selection, where you're looking for a specific omega on a branch. So I don't understand quite what the consequences of this means, but if you're looking at evolution, but if those models don't satisfy your algebra, then people would probably really care a lot, because lots of major papers look at
them. Yeah, I agree. I think people will care. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It's exciting, yes. Yeah.
That was easy enough. So thank you again, and the next speaker is...